In the law, the rabbis looked at the law as a pyramid. And the base of the pyramid were the 613 laws. And then it moved up quite way up the pyramid. Then the next point were the Ten Commandments. Then it moved up and it was the three phenomena that what does God require of thee except to love, justice, do mercy, and walk humbly before your God. The highest point in the pyramid and all through the Talmud is thou shalt love thy neighbors thyself. So when Christ said it, that all the law is fulfilled in this one word, even this, that thou shalt love thy neighbor, he wasn't saying a new thing. He was saying the same thing that the ancient rabbis had been saying for centuries.
Were they then just testing him when they
Leviticus
asked?
19, verse 18 says, thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord thy God. What?
Were they then just testing him when the guy asked, what is the great commandment?
Of course. They knew that was the great commandment. It had always been the great commandment.
I always thought it was an honest question.
There was no such thing as an honest question. Time, and time hasn't changed anything.
Must have slept well.
You understand me? I'm serious. There's no such thing as an honest question. You question to establish your esteem. Am I communicating? Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself does something totally different. The question is, who is your neighbor? What?
That's
the question.
Isn't everyone that you come in contact with? Anybody
in need? Christ defined a neighbor in the parable of the Good Samaritan. And they asked him, who is thine? When he said this, he said, who is my neighbor? Same question. He told a parable. He answered the question with a parable. And he used the parable in to such an extent that it totally destroyed Jewish thinking at the time. The Samaritans were the dirtiest of all people, because from the standpoint of the quote-unquote true Jews, they had mixed and built their own temple and forsaken the temple in Jerusalem. And so when the people in Galilee, they were forbidden to even walk through Samaria. And so when the Good Samaritan, the one that laid down his life for the one in need, Christ then defined as the neighbor. He said, this is my neighbor, this is the neighbor. You can check that out. I don't want to study that particular parable tonight. But without you knowing it, the scripture said God is love. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So by a particular form of reasoning, you come to a conclusion that he is God made flesh, tabernacling in the flesh. Therefore, by any kind of a logical deduction, God has to be truth, love, the way, and the life. So truth, the way, the life, and love are all the same thing. We think that love is an activity of our lives. But God said that love is a fruit. Let's go to Luke. If you don't have a Bible, don't worry about it. Luke 44. 644, I mean. There's no Luke 44.
Just testing. That's why I said don't get a Bible.
Luke what?
Luke 6, 43. Well, this is part of this, the parable on the, I mean the Sermon on the Mount. Well, let's start in verse 37. Judge not and ye shall not be judged. Condemn not, ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, ye shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you meet, withal it shall be measured to you again. And he spake a parable unto them. Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? The disciple is not above his master, but every one that is perfect or fully tested shall be as his master. Why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Either how can thou say to thy brother, Brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye, when thou thyself beholdest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to pull out the mote that is in thy brother's eye. A mote's a real little teeny thing, by the way. For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of bramble bush gather they not grapes. Gather the grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. An evil man bringeth out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. The fruit, the tree is known by the fruit. Galatians, throughout the scripture, says the fruit of the Spirit, or the fruit of that particular tree, is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, etc. You've spent a lifetime finding out what love isn't. Now, those of you that are married that in truth hate your spouses, you tolerate them out of some hope that things might get better. There are those of you in here that would rather be someplace else because you think that there is love someplace else. There are those of you who have tried for 15 years to show forth love, and you failed miserably. In the darkest moments in your own closets, I don't care how you define it. Some of you define it by kink, some of it you define it by lust, some of it you define it by fantasies. You're all searching for love. But none of you think you really have it. Every once in a while, there's a feeling of love. But all of you are experts on knowing what love isn't. I take that back. All of you are not experts, because some of you still get deceived. I'm going to repeat something that I said the other night, because it's so incredibly, unbelievably obvious once we see it. Romantic love is, doesn't matter whether you prefer even the one of the same sex, which I hope none of you do, but anyway, romantic love is the only one of the loves that by definition has to encompass body, soul, and spirit. It has to have something to do with the body, because romance has to do with an image. It has to have something to do with the soul, because it has something to do with personality and challenge and what you want in a mate, etc., etc. And it has to have something to do with spirit, because you intrinsically believe that for romantic love, it has to be forever. I mean, there's another thing up here that we're not talking about tonight, and that's called one-night stands. But family love doesn't matter if you're ugly. It doesn't matter the condition of your body, but it does require something from the soul. True friendship, most of us have never known true friendship, but true friendship also doesn't require anything from the body, and it's a thing of the soul, and you hope it's eternal. But as you've all found out, by definition, all that spirit means is something eternal, something that'll last forever. That's the only worry, the only definition you ever have to worry about. Okay. Now, you've all found out, even the married ones, you found out that there's something wrong with the equation. That romantic love just isn't working. Right? Or is it? Maybe you're... It just doesn't work. It just doesn't meet the standards. Family love hasn't worked. Friend love hasn't worked. And the reason I can tell you it doesn't work is because I know you all well enough to know that your basis for love is like a roller coaster. And as long as your basis for love is like a roller coaster, whether it's family, whether it's friend, whether it's romantic, then you have defined your own equation. In other words, you have said it doesn't work. God is not interested in your roller coasters. As I've told you so often, He doesn't want you in praise or in joy for a moment, and then in depression for a season. He wants out of your bellies to flow rivers of continuous joy and water and life. So there's something here wrong with love. And that's what we're going to spend the next few weeks on the Sunday nights talking about. We're going to see if we can find out what love is. We're going to see if we can penetrate these thick skulls and these stupid hormones to come to a position where we know with a certainty and an anchor and a foreverness and a settledness, love. Now, I may offend some of you all the time. I know I'll offend all of you some of the time. Because you have a romanticized view of love that is so strong within your being that words and speech cannot touch it. We'll find out how this is why most of you are subject to one form of pornography or another, unconsciously. It's because you don't know love. It's why you're subject to all of the kink that causes you guilt internally in the secret places of your closets. It's because you don't know love. The mystery of all of this is going to be tied to your neighbor. Thou shalt love your neighbor as yourself. All of the law and all of the prophets, all of the meaning of time and space is tied into that one sentence. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself.
That's incredible, because most other people put that like at the end. I mean,
it's the best, the top, the highest. And I guarantee you, you can't have a friend unless he's first your neighbor. You can't have a family unless they're first your neighbor. And you can't have a romantic love unless they're first your neighbor.
The different types of love that it mentions in the New Testament.
There's only one that has any merit.
All of those can be fulfilled in agape, right?
Right.
But the ergos or whatever.
Those are just,
it won't.
They won't. They don't. They don't.
Column.
They don't pass the test. I don't want to bore you with word studies, but there are five different words in the Greek that are translated as love in the New Testament. But the only one the Church, Israel, the believers are concerned with is agapeo.
And it's romantic also.
It's all of them. And it's what the New Testament, or some people translate as charity. Now, the plural of agapeo is agape. And agape is a plural in the Greek, and it means the love feast. It's where two or more are gathered in love. Then you're in feast, by definition. Now, it's impossible. It's all of the world is here, looking in this arena, the romantic love, family, and friend. But it's impossible for anyone except Israel, in any other place except the promise, to have a neighbor. It's impossible. Huh. You can't. No, a Gentile can't have a neighbor. All a Gentile can have is a mirror. Am I communicating?
It's not possible for a Gentile to love.
Have agape.
No.
It's not possible for the human race to be in the position of agape or agapeo without the cross.
Can you define what neighbor means? Because I'm not sure that I know in the...
That's what we're going to spend the next long time finding out. I want you to be where you are, whatever you think it means is fine right now.
I
I'll just promise you something. You've never had a neighbor. A man named Giovanni wrote a poem in 1400, which I want to read to you now, otherwise you're going to get scared. You're going to get in law a minute. Just listen. There is nothing I can give you which you have not already, but there is much, very much, that while I cannot give it, you can take. No heaven can come to us unless our hearts find rest in today. Take heaven. No peace lies in the future which is not hidden in this present instant. Take peace. The gloom of the world is but a shadow. Behind it, yet within it, now is joy. There is a radiance and glory in the darkness. Could we but see? To see, we have only to look. I beseech you to look. Life is so generous a giver, but we, judging its gifts or fruits by their covering, cast them away as ugly or heavy or hard. Remove the covering and you will find beneath it a living splendor woven of love by wisdom with power. Welcome it, grasp it, and you touch the angel's hand that brings it to you. Everything we call a trial, a sorrow, or a duty, believe me, that angel's hand is there. The gift is there. The love is there, and the wonder of an ever overshadowing presence. Our joys, too, be not content with them as joys. They, too, conceal a more diviner gift. And so at this time I greet you, not quite as the world sends greetings, but with profound esteem and with the prayer that for you now and forever the day breaks and the shadow flees away. Well, that's all we're about. We're going to try to get rid of some shadows. Now, maybe I've read you wrong. Maybe all of you are satisfied with the love as you now know it. Does anybody? Have I read you wrong? Well, the first secret of love is that it cannot be seen with physical eyes. Never, ever, 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 ever. If it's dependent on the senses, you won't believe it. Love is the, what we might call the first fruit of the Spirit. Everything else there is in the universe will flow from love. But love can't be looked for. If you ever look for it, it will escape you because you will make love a work. Understand?
Yeah.
It's got to be produced. If it's a fruit, it's got to be produced, to continue that metaphor of the scriptures, it's got to be produced by the right tree. That's why when Christ was baptized, John the Baptist's statement to him was, "Now the axe is laid to the root of the tree." The wrong tree was cut down 2,000 years ago. It cut it, it's taproot. You understand
the
what
taproot?
The axe was laid to the taproot of the wrong tree at the baptism of Christ.
Bad tree.
The usurper tree.
The usurper tree, the bad tree, you.
Oh,
the right tree was cut down, but it was the bad tree.
Now I'm very confused.
A good tree bringeth forth not corrupt fruit. It's impossible. Now, how in the hell do we come to this weird position of love, then? What is... There's only two possible things. Let's go back to Luke, right? Are you still... Well, let's go to the one in Matthew.
Oh, are you saying that the Christ was the wrong tree before he was baptized?
Exactly.
Oh, gee.
I'm saying that Christ failed after the flesh in his mission. If he failed, if he had succeeded, he wouldn't have had to go under the cross.
If man
could have been redeemed, he wouldn't have had to go to the cross. If you could have known love, he wouldn't have had to go to the cross.
Matthew
5.
Matthew what?
5.
Seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You've spent a lifetime trying to be rich in spirit. Ever since you've gotten to the Bible study here, you've come here to sit at these feet, at this floor, trying to be rich in spirit. Christ comes against that with a massive axe and says, Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Mourn for what? The reason you don't know who you are and the reason that you don't love is that you've never, in earnest, mourned for the death of yourself. You've never put that false self away once and for all time and went through the mourning process. You've never buried self. And so you continually think that if I learn a little bit more in Bible study, or if I make a little bit more money, or if that other person was just a little bit nicer to me, or if I have a little bit more education, or if I'm just become just a little bit better at this, then you'll have it. You've never mourned. Am I communicating?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Comforted with what? There's only one thing that can comfort, and that's the resurrection. Not some stupid mind, man-pleasing words. The resurrection. If that isn't existent, you're dead meat. You better find that out for yourself now. The reason there's no love in your marriages, because you haven't mourned for your death. And therefore, you make demands on each other. Am I communicating?
Yeah.
Tie it to what we're studying in the other group. The reason there's no love is that you don't know you're leprous from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Meek. Do you know what a disciple is? By definition, a disciple has to be in a position of meekness. It has nothing to do with meek isn't a condition of your character. It's a positional place. Meekness is impossible except in the position of a disciple, because it has nothing to do with the personality. It has to do with the position.
Yeah.
that you have placed in effect your being at the disposal and will of God without condition. You have presented yourself the living sacrifice to the extent that you have agreed not to complain about what's going to happen the next instant, not to desire more than you have at the next instant. That's what a disciple is. You can't become a disciple unless you know you have been crucified. Am I communicating? Do you understand? Otherwise, you will be in a continuum of wanting things to be different than they are at that moment. It'll be automatic, and you will spend a lifetime judging others. This is what the Sermon on the Mount is about. It's the preamble to love that can only take place, that can only be manifest in a new creation. Not some made up, made up overview of you. Not some you putting on makeup. Not some you dressing up in your Sunday best. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Remember, I've told you 100 times. That the only position that you can be in as a disciple is to be in a position of need, but that need is that which can only be met by the Father, but and by no other, nothing else. If you believe your need can be met by another human being, you're not a disciple. You haven't mourned. And you will do nothing but eat that other person's flesh. And pretty soon you will become sick of that flesh and become odious. They will become odious to you and you will be odious to them. It's axiomatic. Now for especially you, as those of you who are teaching other groups, it's part of the lot. They'll eat your flesh for a while. Well, you understand I'm not going to read the rest of it, because I want to get in love, but you understand what the preamble is before there can be love possible?
Yeah. This thing about mourning. It's killer stuff.
I think about
you walk around and it's like you have a conversation with this dead self. You never say that, you know, admit to yourself that, well, Larry, you're never gonna be a great football player. You're never gonna be a really talented this or that, or you're never gonna. The things that somewhere I've suppressed, and I never, and so there's this illusion that you think, well, yeah, maybe I will be, but it's like you're a crazy person when you talk like that.
That's why all mind talk.
Yeah.
All mind talk is the evidence of no mourning.
I'm sure I've never fully mourned for all that, or not honestly to myself. I mean, I know what it is to feel sorry for myself.
No, mourning isn't feeling sorry.
Yeah,
I feel sorry for a dead body. That's Does everybody understand a little bit?
One of these days you're going to say, does everybody understand a lot?
Does everybody understand 98% of what you said?
Yeah. It's a while. I can't even imagine not having mind talk. I mean, it's just such an automatic
thing.
What would it be like if it wasn't there? What if there weren't expectations and plans and all the really continuous vomiting?
It's called freedom, my dear.
Freedom
is prison. I miss something.
It's pretty nice.
Butch gets bonus.
Well, I tell you what, Doug is doing a hell of a job
with what?
He's my
Doug's doing a hell of a job over there with Columbia.
No, yeah, Butch is perfect already.
I mean, he's ready to start on
Bucks.
The rest of them.
Yeah,
Butch,
now
Buck's got a new friend.
He's got a friend, period.
He's got a friend.
And a mustache.
And a mustache.
I want to. I'm going to stop at this point because
we're about to blow up.
We've got to show the house tomorrow.
We're over revel.
I'd like to. I mean, I don't know that this is what we do, but I think what we'll be doing on Sundays for a long time is truly searching out and being partakers of love.
Amen.
But can you see this in a little bit? I mean, we'll spend a lot of time on this, but Bloom, I got to give credit where credit's due. Bloom came up with his chart, so.
So it's not right.
No, it's right. I promise.
It feels like a Roto-Rooter or something.
please, don't. You've got to come to, by now, to a position where you know that the love that you have thought you had and thought you wanted, really, you really weren't honest with yourselves. You kind of hustled yourselves. Well, God's got something that's that far away from you that says, I never again have to hustle. I never again have to act. It's awesome.
It's exciting.
But consider the fact that in order for it to be manifest, there must be true death. And whenever there's death, by the law, there's a period of mourning. So you have to see all of your thoughts and ambitions and desires that you think you have, in truth, are only mournings for what might have been had you not gone to the cross. Now see them as that and get rid of them. Don't live in those stupid illusions anymore. Even the joy that you may have known, even the love that you may have known thus far, is only a covering, the chaff to hide the deeper joy and the deeper love. That's never, ever, ever once dependent on the senses. That's so exciting that it's what every love song, every prophet, every scientist in the universe is searching for. But its secret starts here, at this neighbor position. You are created so that the desire of your heart is love. I mean, that's all there is. The end of all of this stuff is unfeigned or love without hypocrisy. The end of the commandment. The end of all of the law, all of the prophets, the reason for time and space is to love your neighbor as yourself. The reason for the covenant that we celebrate in the Lord's Supper, the taking of the bread and the wine, is love. If it's not love, it's nothing. You only have the capacity to love, even in the limited extent that you've known thus far, because of the covenant, because of what he accomplished. But there's an infinite number. All of the love that you've known as love thus far has just been the chaff and the seed. There's an infinite number, an infinite infinite expansion in you available now, what that further manifestation of what love is. And when you love, every other thing is met. Now all I want you to do is to hunger and thirst after that right now. Now again, from this metaphor used in Abraham, just as Abraham was asleep during the cutting of the covenant, he put him into the deep sleep and experienced the horror of great darkness. The reason he experienced that horror is because he had to mourn for himself. Then all God did was wake him up. But most of you have been afraid to go through the mourning process because you still believe that there's something that can make you complete, external to you. You don't have to do that anymore. And that same night he was betrayed. He took the bread and he blessed it, saying,
Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe,
who bringeth
forth bread from the earth.
He bringeth forth the bread of life from this earthen vessel to feed your neighbor. So take, eat, this is my body. And what that means is, it doesn't mean that now you're eating by transubstantiation, or whatever that word is. What it means is that you're discerning that you don't have the capacity to do any of it, and it's all Him. Okay? So you're in agreement with that. If you think you have the capacity to do it, to do something after the flesh, and you, for those of you in stealth, you've caused the flesh to be seen as leprous and you're unclean. And that's why Christ said, for this cause many of you are sick. Now Harry's sick because he's leprous.
notice the pregnant pause after you said that.
Nobody's going to die. Nobody's going to tell him. Nobody's going to tell. What?
He's not friend.
I have to go make a phone call. He's not white enough.
Get the tape tomorrow.
No, Pete, roll the tape back. Roll the tape back and erase it just at the laughter.
Yeah,
just pause in silence.
Five minutes
Ooh.
Now again, because of you not knowing love, all your life you've tried to be worthy. That's the only reason, that's the compelling force in the human race to accomplish something. Is they're trying to be worthy for love. Down at the core level of their being. You can't be worthy for love. You're leprous. You're dead. Now mourn for it. Now let's drink a toast to Him that is worthy of our life. And see it in everyone. To life.
Life.
To fire.
I love you. Yeah.
You really give our names.
Anybody have anything else? Make a big guy.